Hello and welcome back to The Meaning of Life with me, your host, which is me. Today I'm sat in my lovely granddad's house with my granddad in front of me. Do you want to say hello?
Hello.
And my father sat by the side playing guitar. That was, yeah, there you go. You got the whole three generations of the Bakers and the chest of the dog. Okay, he didn't want to say hello. First of all, granddad, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Are you happy to be on this wonderful show on Spotify?
Oh, over the moon, Jim.
What year were you born in?
1949.
And so in 1968, you were 19 years old, correct?
Yes.
And in this year, 2021, I am 19 years old. So what I was wondering, and go off as much as you want, is, in your opinion, has the world changed much from when you were 19 to now that I'm 19? What's the biggest differences?
I don't think it's altered that much, really. Technical-wise, you've got all the electronics now, but people are much about the same, and there's just more of them. And because of everything is on the net now, you get to know exactly what's happening all around the world immediately, whereas in our time, you had to wait for someone to write it up, give it to their editor, put it in the newspaper, and by the time they'd come out, that person they was writing about was already dead.
Do you think that's a good change? Is it good for people?
Sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. Back to them sort of years, and nobody really lived outside the town, and it caused a few problems, whereas now, apart from the ones that drive all over the place, you've got the internet now, so you know what events are on, get to meet people that way. So, and of course, like, you've still got clubs, like with me motorbike clubs. I still meet people now. The same as in 68, I was a member of clubs, and I was still meeting people then, so that sort of thing, it still carries on the same.
Do you think the addition of stuff like Facebook and Twitter and all that, does it help you meet people more, or does it detract from it?
It can help you, but just recently it seems to be driving me mad, because everybody's got an opinion, we all think our opinion is right, and everyone just tries to force it on you. And with me, I mean, I just like an easygoing life. Keep your opinions to yourself as much as possible. If they ask you, then you tell them. But don't try and preach.
Yeah.
It will only cause another war.
We should all be more like you and just use Facebook to tell jokes.
You will be old one day.
One day. Hopefully. So you're saying... A big difference is the difference in communication, right? And everyone can say all the shit that's on their mind, right? Do you think, is that, in terms of stuff like just topics about mental health, race, sex, gender, all that stuff, do you think it's beneficial for the world that now everyone can voice every opinion all the time?
It is good in some respects, but it hasn't altered. I mean, I don't think there is a major problem. We had exactly the same problems when I was a kid. But now, because he's put it on the open market to everyone on the internet, then, of course, as I said before, you get the preachers that want to do this and do that, the do-gooders. Go back in history, and yet everybody had problems with slavery and God knows what else. But you don't keep going on about it. You learn by your mistakes, and hopefully it don't happen again. But I've been proved wrong lots of times.
It's obviously because I'm only 19. I've not, you know, been around that long. And of all the campaigns and stuff you see going on, like, you know, for example, feeding, you know, kids all over the world in Africa, and you know, saving water and saving the planet, all that stuff. Because you've kind of, you know, been through the last few decades. Have you seen this stuff actually change? And has the world changed through campaigning much? Or do you think protesters should just go home?
I don't think a lot has changed. A lot of people have got very rich on the back of all these collections and whatever. I mean, I can remember probably a little bit later than 68, but we had massive big collections for people out in Africa to supply on water, and they're still doing exactly the same thing now. So where did all this money go?
Yeah.
But at the time, people like Bob Geldof that preached to everyone, he's a multimillionaire, so like somebody gained something out of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know how the richest people in the world, like, you know, like the guy who made Amazon, Jeff Bezos, and then you've got the, you know, Elon Musk and all these big multi-billionaires. And if they wanted to, they could spend like 5% of their net worth and then we wouldn't ever need charity again. But they don't. You know?
Because, as I say, it doesn't all go to what you think it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's like your charity shops in our town. We've probably got 7 or 8 charity shops. And everyone thinks, oh yeah, go in there and it all goes to charity. But they only have to give, I believe, 10%
of the takings. Is that really it?
10% of the takings to charity. All the workers in the shop are all working for nothing. They just volunteer.
Mm.
The manageress or manager, he's raking in all the money. So it's not a charity thing, it's just a business.
Yeah.
So, and it's been the same all my life, I suppose. I mean, what can you do? You're never going to change it.
Yeah. So, do you reckon there's always going to be people that need help?
You know? Yeah. But by the same token, you have to sort of try and help yourself. I mean, silly adverts where, oh, this woman has to walk 5 miles each day to go and get water. Well, why don't they move nearer to the water? It was only a mud up. People don't need so much money. They want information and to be told, if you was to do this, it would be less energy to do it and more benefits. So it's education more than money, I think.
Yeah. Earlier on, you were speaking about technology as a big thing that's changed. If you can cast your mind back to 1968, when you were, you know, on the verge of 20, what was the state of technology then, and what was the status quo for you?
Telephones. There was still a lot of telephones around where you put your money in, dialed your number. When someone answered, you press button A, and when you finished, you press button B, and you got back whatever money wasn't used.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like technology. TV, you had 3 channels, BBC, ITA, and then I think BBC Two come out. And that was it. I mean, that was the technology. People didn't really need anything else. I mean, as kids, we all spent all our time playing out in the road, playing cricket, knock down ginger and all stupid games.
And tying strings to the doors.
Yeah, tying strings to the door knockers. Yeah, so that as one door opened, it knocked on the door opposite. And if you got it all done right without a car coming past, you could have half a dozen doors all opening at the same time.
Well, I don't know if you got any string, but we can go and do it now if you want. relive the childhood years.
Yeah.
So you're saying for when you were a kid, a lot of entertainment was going out with mates and just hanging about.
Yep.
Do you think technology obviously is more for entertainment nowadays than it was before? Like before, it was for, you know, you needed it, right, to communicate or whatever. Do you think entertainment through technology now is sustainable or dangerous or anything?
It can be a bit dangerous. I mean, so as a kid, going back sort of 12 years old, you had a smaller group of friends. So if you wanted to speak to a friend, you got on your push bike and rode around, knocked on their door. You know, is Stephen coming out today? Or do you fancy going train spotting tomorrow?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Whereas now, you got friends all over the world. Some of them you don't see from 1 year to the next, but they're still friends. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I bumped into a friend of mine, Eddie Reeve. I haven't seen him since I was 17 years old. And yet, I went round his house and we just more or less carried on the same conversation that we was talking about when I was 17. So nothing's advanced. We still spoke exactly the same rubbish 2 weeks ago that we'd done when we were 17 years old.
How did you get in contact with him again?
Once again, Facebook. So it does have its good points. But I mean, I'm because of getting in touch with him, he's now got in touch with a couple of my other friends. So we're all sort of meeting up. It's a question of, can we meet up with everyone before any of us kick the bucket?
Yeah. You get a lot of children like me nowadays that do stuff like, for example, wear a Beatles t-shirt, you know, which I am now, or they, you know, you get kids that are really into, you know, 60s music and 70s music and all that kind of stuff. Do you think, compared to the music from your day, how much has stuff changed?
Well, the music from our day, we had the Beatles.
Is that what you were listening to when you were 19?
But you only listened to it on the radio.
Yeah.
If you was lucky enough to have a record player and enough money to buy the records. I mean, on a Sunday, they used to play the top 10. And I had a four-track tape recorder, and you would tape the top 10, and there was never talking over the song. So as soon as it finished a song, you went click, and then waited for the next song, and then click, and back on again. And then you had the top 10 for the whole week to listen to at your leisure. When I was a kid, you had 78 records, which were like very bad because like they wore out quickly. You had needles that you had to change every couple of plays. Mm. And to save money, you end up sharpening the needles on the side of a matchbox to make them sharper.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. And of course, then you had to wind up the old gramophone as well.
Yeah.
But and then when like it suddenly come along, like with the 45s and 33s, I remember my dad buying a new turntable for the radiogram, and we couldn't believe it. I mean, he went out and bought Acker Bilk, Stranger on the Shore, and that was our first record. And we nearly wore it out because, like, we played that for probably 2 months before we could afford another record.
I mean, the way you describe it, it sounds kind of like if you were limited to these 10 songs or this one record, you bloody loved it and wore it out.
Yeah, because I still think we had the best music, we had the best motorbikes, best cars, and then as people have like gone on in generations, then they've gone on to like modern technology. Mm. But a lot of people still say, oh, some of them old songs are really good, because you can't really bring out a new song. It's only a slight modification of an old one. There's only so many notes that you can play and only so many words that you can sing.
Did you hear that, Dad? Stop. Do you want to give your take on your music?
I think you'll find there's all some great music coming out, and it's all written by me.
Do you want to plug your music?
Yeah, but it's only your modesty that stops you from talking about it, really, isn't it?
It's only about only so many notes. I was watching a thing about it where modern music, they're limiting the chords and almost one-note melodies now. It's almost like being too melodic is old-fashioned sounding. So it's moved on again, and I'm sure it'll go back again one day.
But when you go back to big groups like Status Quo, they only ever play three chords.
Yeah, three good ones, though. They're picked right ones, isn't they?
Yeah, luckily they fitted what they sang. I've tried singing, but none of the women threw their knickers at me like Tom Jones, so I'll give it up.
Tom Jones threw his knickers at you?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. Yeah, we used to sort of go out and watch groups. You had massive big groups that used to go there. Rolling Stones and all that. Because in those days, they never got on TV, unless it was a real big event. But they spent all their time travelling around the country, and they'd pop into little towns like this and do a gig, and that would pay their petrol money and their wages to get them down to the next town. And that's the way they survived. One in a thousand managed to make it in the big time and then could give us all the elbow then, and they just carried on TV.
I read the other day, I can't remember the exact number, but you know on Spotify, where you can like stream music live, each stream, the artist gets paid like 0.001 pence or something stupid. And it like it's basically like it doesn't really pay like record sales do. Do you think that's what do you make of that? Because like people can't really tour anymore, especially because of COVID, and it's like live music is kind of dying.
It's like welcome to the real world, isn't it? We all have to work for a living, and now they've got to work for a living.
You don't think music is work?
Well, it's work that you enjoy. So, and we all know that if you can find a job that you really enjoy, you never have to go to work again.
Yeah.
So it's all about doing something you really enjoy.
Dad's written down here, social freedom. What does that mean?
Well, what I mean by that is if you're homosexual now, you've got more chance of admitting to it without getting beaten up.
Like, yeah, because in my day,
we battered homosexuals.
Yeah. But, it used to be the same in my day. I mean, that was all quite common, especially like with the skinheads and whatever. They just wanted to do something that wasn't run-of-the-mill. So they went out up Brick Lane, tracing all the Pakistanis and Indians. Then they'd try and find pubs where they was all gay and going in there. It was just like hooliganism, really, the same as you get some with football. But I mean, I knew quite a few people that was gay when I was growing up, and although they wouldn't actually admit it, you could tell by the dress straight away that it was a bit the other way. But everything was fine, everyone's entitled to do what they want to do, but it must be a lot easier for people now, the fact that they can actually sort of come out and say it.
Did you know of many people that were, you know, gay or bisexual or whatever and were afraid to come out?
Yeah, a lot of times I knocked on the door and said, can Freddie come out today? And his dad said, no.
That's a real shame. That. One day dad will let me. It's strange nowadays because there's a whole culture, like, you know, through social media, because every kid nowadays voices everything about themselves. So everyone's kind of so exposed that they feel kind of, you know, the average kid coming out as gay on Instagram wouldn't really feel it as a big deal. And I mean, it must have changed so much because everyone, you know, has that medium.
How much do you want to put it out in public, exactly what you do and how you feel and whatever? Sometimes you just need to have a little bit of a private life. Right? I mean, I once spoke to one of my mates. I says, are you gay? He said, no. He said, but the bloke I sleep with is.
was that the bloke you sleep with?
Yeah. But, I mean, back in the day, I mean, it must have been so difficult for people that were scared to mention it. Number one, it was illegal and they could get, like, arrested.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. I've never experienced anything like that.
But then from that, it's gone completely the other way now. They're having big marches and whatever. Oh, support this, support that. You think, no, just let people get on with their lives. If they want to be gay, let them be gay. But they don't need marches to tell them they can be gay. They just need to mix with other people and do their own thing.
You're just jealous because they sold out of rainbow flags.
Yeah, I know. I was going to make one.
You'd suit it. Do you think, as a whole, like, you know, social media aside and all that, like, as a whole culture, do you think views have shifted to be more tolerant, or do you think not really?
No, I don't think it's any different now. People did used to tolerate it, but everyone seemed to keep quiet about it. But, say, nowadays, it's broadcast everywhere. So therefore you have a problem that if you don't fit in with all the marches and whatever, then people won't agree with you. And then you become an outcast, which is completely wrong. So let's do away with all the marches. Let's get on with right life and anything that went wrong in the past. It's history. Let's learn by our mistakes in the past.
I was actually genuinely curious. I was thinking of stuff to say on the way. And something that I would like to know more about is your kind of your experience in work.
Yeah, when I was at school, probably 12 years old, paper round in the morning, used to get up, go out 6 o'clock, sort out all my papers, and then go and deliver them all, get back home, straight to school. And then from school, I'd meet the van down at the Chequers, and that would take me up to Beckton Gasworks, and I'd be there probably till 7:30 at night, selling all the papers. And then I'd come home. And sometimes I'd go straight home, sometimes I'd go round my mates down his garage and we'd muck around with the motorbikes or whatever. But, I mean, it was such a good little world, you know, because the newspapers at the time were tuppence halfpenny each. Well, everyone was in a rush to get home, so they all give you a threepence. So you got a halfpenny on every paper, plus your money from the Evening Standard for selling them. So it was a real good earner. And when I actually left school, I sold the paper around to one of my mates. Started work, and I was on £5 a week as a cash register mechanic up in Tottenham Court Road. And I thought, oh, this would be brilliant. Well, what I didn't realise, that as soon as I left school, my mum wanted £1, well, 30 bob then, £1.50, housekeeping. It cost me £1.50 for my train. That left me £2. And I thought, this is crazy. I was far better off when I was at school, but...
And how old were you at this point?
16.
And what could that kind of money get you those days?
Petrol was probably 2 and 6 a gallon, which is, well,
what's that in litres?
12.5 pence for 4.5 litres.
Wow, okay, yeah.
I've just come up to nearly 17 now. I bought a motorbike. It was a really quick bike, it'd been tuned. And I said to my mate, I said, how much you want for it? He says, £25. I said, you've got no chance. He said, how much you got? And I looked at him, I said, I've got £12.50. And he said, nah, he said, I'm not taking that. He says, what else you got? I said, I've got an air rifle and a 4-track tape recorder. Yeah, all right. So a deal was done, 12.5 quid, 4-track tape recorder and an air rifle. And I had my first 100-mile-an-hour bike.
And whatever happened to the rifle and the recorder?
I think he just sold it on eventually. Uh-huh. I can't remember him ever using it. But he got to a stage then where we was like down the motorbike club, down at the Fishing Smack in Balking, every Friday night, and you'd be playing the records and drinking coffee all night long.
Coffee all night.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Oh,
fuck that, me, that's wild.
That's the way we were. I mean, all this about roughy-tufty motorcyclists. I mean, we used to go to all the coffee bars up in Hornchurch, right over Thaden Boys, everywhere. But it was all coffee bars everywhere. There was never going out drinking. But people assumed that you went out and got drunk. But I can't remember getting drunk until, I don't know, I was probably already engaged in, probably working out in Guernsey.
When was that?
That was when I was 20. I was in 68.
Right, yeah.
Well, 19. And I was working out in Guernsey for 6 months. And that's when Shirley decided to come out. And once again, communication. I got a letter. I'll be out on Monday. I thought, oh, what are we going to do? So I had to go and see about renting a flat. So I managed to rent a flat for fiver a week. Then I rented a car. That was £5 a week. And we lived out there for about 3 months.
How was that?
Oh, it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Like a different world out there. I mean, contentment. I mean, my dad was in digs on the other side of the island, and he's talking to the lady there that owned it and said about, oh yeah, Dave's over in St. Peterport. And she went, oh, that's nice. He says, yeah, you know where the main centre? She said, no, I've never been there. Yeah, he says, you must have been to St. Peterport. She said, why do I want to go there? Well, to go shopping. Yeah, but I've got a shop down the end of the road. And she was probably in her 40s then, and she'd never been to the other side of the island, which was 3.5 miles away. And they say how people were so content, and you think, it must be lovely to be like that. Just don't want to know. They're happy in their little bubble.
Yeah, just being self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Must be nice.
Yeah. But now we want to go everywhere. I mean, I hadn't been married that long, and then all of a sudden I was driving out to Turkey and Italy. And
yeah, you got around, didn't you?
Yeah, in Norway. And
so what was the first job you got driving? Oh, was that in your 20s?
Oh. 21.
So tell me a bit about that.
That was just driving in for a local firm around Dagenham. And then we was put in as a subcontractor into Fords. And then I was lucky enough to get into Fords. And I worked there for 4 years. Drove me absolutely mad because at that age I wanted to go everywhere. So with that, I chucked the job in, went on the continent, so doing everything, going everywhere. Then when Pete came along, he decided I needed to be back home again more often. So I got in touch with Fords and I was back in there within a fortnight, which people said, I don't know how you got back that easy.
They must have loved you.
Yeah. And so I was there for another 4 years. And then when I broke my ankle when I was ice skating. Mm-hmm. And I spent about 6 months just driving a forklift because they wouldn't let me back in the trucks.
Must have been pretty slow on the M25.
What M25?
Yeah, it's just showing my age here.
Yeah.
The A1, the first one, the Roman Road.
When we used to go up to Daventry and Leamington Spa, you used to go up through A Bridge in 40-foot trailers. Faden Boys sometimes, and you'd work your old way through up the A10, Enfield. And then you'd pick up the M1 up at Watford, near Watford's Way. And he was only on the motorway for a little bit and then pulled off on the A45 up to Leamington.
So you did a lot of it just through fields.
Yeah. Yeah, and you think to yourself, oh, God, when they started building the motorway, you think, oh, that'd make life so much easier. And it didn't make it easier at all because all of a sudden, where have all these cars come from?
Yeah,
because the M25 was chock-a-block, and you think, I'll go on an off-circular. No, that was still chock-a-block. But, I mean, so early 70s, I could go to Heston Services on the M4 to do a trailer change for Fords, and I could do that trip in just over an hour. You'd go right away through the middle of London. And then, oh, no, you can't go through London. Now we've banned that, so you've got to go the long way. Now it probably takes you 3.5 hours, the same journey. But that's progress.
What do you make of all the, basically not being able to drive through London because of pollution?
Well,
they're extending the zones, aren't they, up to North Circular?
Yep, and if you have a look, even outside the North Circular, they've still got all the cameras there, because a lot of big trucks, they're like saying inside the M25, you've got to be up to sort of Euro 5. And a lot of it is just about taking money off people. Because if it was like just about emissions, they'd say, no, you can't come in. Sorry, it's full stop. But no, if you pay your £12 a day, you can go in with a car. So it's not about emissions, it's about money. And when they keep on about climate control, go back to 1976, we had an absolutely red hot summer. Go back to 63, we had snow 3 foot deep everywhere. 1947, just before I was born, it was all thick snow everywhere. And then you can go back to the ice age, and then it all melted. So what was that, climate change? Was that someone had a big old lorry ticking over somewhere that was in the ice age, melting all the ice? And I think it's all about excuses. You can understand the emissions giving people like asthma and whatever, but it's got nothing to do with climate change at all. That's just an excuse to get more money.
So do you think climate change is it over exaggerated, or do you think government reaction is?
It's government reaction. As I say, everything goes in cycles. And when you look at climate change over the years, it just goes round and round. I mean, when you talk about emissions, go back to when I was a kid and you had the smog. Now, there's real bad smogs, right, in the early part of the century. At one stage, I think it killed about 12 million people.
Wow.
In one winter. And a lot of that was all in 1 week. And it was absolutely diabolical. I can remember going out in a car with my mum and dad and Bob, and we was driving along, and then he couldn't see anymore. So my mum had to get out. She was resting her hand on the front wing of the car, and she was telling me, Dad, right a bit, left a bit, park car, pull out right. And that's how we got home, all the way from the Merry Fiddlers, right the way back to Chaplin Road in Dagenham. And then as soon as he got in, he says, God, it's freezing. Put some more coal on the fire. Let's have a big fire, warm us up. And so consequently, there was more smoke coming out. So you can see that point of view. Clean air, I'm all for clean air. But sometimes they just go over the top. I mean, in 2025, they're banning all the gas boilers. So what happens, like houses like this that was built up in the 1800s.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, isn't it?
You can't get a new gas boiler. They're talking about banning log fires. There's nothing wrong with the log fire, providing the timber has been seasoned, then it burns cleanly.
I mean, it gets to the point where if the government stops you from burning a log, that's a bit much.
Yeah. You know? And every time they talk about climate change, they always show you a picture of the always steam. Well, it looks like smoke to the people that don't know, coming out of big power stations and whatever. And what they're showing you is the cooling towers.
Yeah.
And all that is big pipes inside, water running from the top, running down, cooling the hot water. And it's the steam going up. So it's nothing to do with light or smoke in the atmosphere. It's only steam. But that's always the picture they show you. But meanwhile, everyone can jump on a plane and fly all around the world and have big seminars on climate change.
Yeah. like when they all fly to California to do a talk.
Yeah.
Did you hear about when Greta Thunberg had her thing in the USA and she got a wind-powered boat across the Atlantic?
And how did she get back?
Probably flew.
Flew back, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've just had a big meeting down in Cornwall.
The G7.
Yeah. Yeah, I only went down there. I've read that they was all down there looking for the G spot. And I thought, so I'll go.
the seventh edition.
Yeah, yeah.
Or that seventh attempt.
It's crazy. Like, why do they have to do it and fly everywhere. They've got the modern technology now. They can all sit indoors and do it on Zoom, right?
Yeah, I've spent the past year of my university life on video call, but Boris Johnson has to fly from London.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's like, oh, we'll have electric buses and we'll have electric lorries and wherever. There was a picture, I think it was last week, there's a big bus outside the Eden Project in Cornwall. It was battery operated and it had run out of power. So they had to send someone out to pick up all the passengers. They had to send a recovery truck out to do a suspended tow to get it back. And then I'm not sure, it might have been Northampton or Nottingham, but I think Nottingham. They had a big fleet of electric buses that come in and they all come in one go. And when it comes to charge them at night, the system couldn't cope with charging them all at once. So they've got a big diesel generator put in the middle of the car park.
Really?
And then charge up all the electric buses. You think, oh, brilliant.
That's fantastic.
And then you see people like, oh, yep, run out of electric, yep. So I was in there at the AA. So he comes out with his generator, starts it up, plugs it in and charges you up enough to get to a charging point. But it's all done off a generator.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's all emission free. Well, tell me who supplies all the electric without any emissions.
It's only emission free if they get the electric by like renewable energy, you know, like solar or wind.
Yeah. But there's nothing free. You don't get anything free. You always have to pay somewhere.
Yeah.
And like with the electricity, if everyone's charging up all their cars every evening when they get home from work, all that's going to happen, you'll go back to the 60s and we'll all have power cuts every night. So then everyone will be buying candles and we'll all have candles around the house so we can see. And we'll have proper old log burners going to put the kettle on, make a cup of tea.
And then there'll be a smog that I can tell my grandkids about.
That's right, yeah.
It's a cycle, isn't it? Every kid should have a smog.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just keep walking around till you fall over.
Yeah. And I was curious about when you, through your 20s and, you know, 30s and that, when you were driving a lot, was there much talk of global warming and emissions and carbon dioxide when you were driving back then?
No.
So no one spoke of it?
Nothing at all. I mean, every car that came out of America had at least 4.5 litre V8 engine in it.
Yeah.
Every motorbike, you could almost take the carburetor off and just pour the petrol in straight. You drunk that much. And nobody seemed to bother about anything. Now, oh yeah, this car's really good on juice and it's got a catalytic converter and it's got this and it's got that. And then it spends half the life in the garage having new bits put on because of all the modern electrics. And no one says anything about the manufacture of all these new parts, how much it's costing.
And where it's coming from.
Hmm. Like all these batteries that are going to be used for electric cars. What are they going to do with the batteries afterwards? You can't bung them in a landfill.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous what they're doing. So everything in 25 years has all got to be renewed.
Yeah.
And you think, how is that saving money? It's not. Go back when they had like cars running in on hydrogen. Mm. Nope, we can't have that. And there was certain people that brought out stuff that you could run the cars on and it didn't need petrol. And some of these discoveries were bought out by people like Shell because they would lose an absolute fortune if they wasn't selling petrol.
So that's about all I've got I wanted to talk about. Is there anything else you want to chat about? Any stories, anything you found interesting?
No, I think that's about it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, you can piss off now then.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll get ready to go down a pub now.
Lovely.
So have me non-alcoholic drink.
I will too have a non-alcoholic drink.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.